Welcome, everybody, to the Life, Death, and Happiness Podcast. This podcast is all about real talks with real people. Why? Because some stories just need to be told. In each episode, I will sit down and talk with my guest about how it is to live with an incurable disease or terminal illness. But let me get this straight before we start. This is all about celebrating life. I'm your host, Daniel Cole. Welcome. Welcome to this episode of Life, Death, and Happiness. And with me today, I have a different guest, of course, but also someone I've actually never met in real life, and that has only happened a few times before. But I want to welcome Gina from Canada. And Gina, I don't know if you say, I'm glad you want to join, and I hope you can tell us a little about who you are and where you're from.
Absolutely, and what an honor to be one of your first international guests that you haven't met yet. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, where should I start? My name's Gina. And I'm a homeschool mom and also a life coach. And I mostly work online because I homeschool my kids. I have three kids all in all and one grandchild. And I like to hike if and when I have spare time.
Oh, nice. Always wanted to go hiking, but it only been like one time at the White Forest Mountain in the U.S. So that is the only time I ever tried that. So it's not like a big hobby, but I have enjoyed it once. So I get what you like, why you like it at least. So can you tell me a little more about, I know you had a situation happen to you some time ago that kind of changed a lot of stuff for you. But can you tell me a little about where you were in life at the moment before that happened?
Sure. Just before that happened, I was training for a marathon and I was a bus driver. And I used to skip up beside my bus whenever I had a break. And everybody made fun of me because I was the only bus driver that was, you know, skipping at the bus loop instead of chatting or smoking or whatever. My kids were 2 to 13 and I was exhausted all the time. I slept for about 4 or 5 hours a night. My husband and I would just pass each other as he was going to work and I was coming home or vice versa. So I actually don't remember a lot of that time in my life because I was so sleep deprived and so busy.
I see. So a lot of the people who have had on the podcast have had either terminal illness or chronic disease and stuff like that, been suffering from cancers. But you had a different thing that happened to you, something that came like out of the blue, I guess. Can you tell me a little about that?
Sure. So mine appeared to come out of the blue, but looking back, I think I've probably had it most of my life. My diagnosis was called vasospastic angina.
Okay.
However, I didn't really know about it till I had a heart attack. And looking like I was as healthy as the doctors thought I was, it came across as very shocking. And I can go into more detail if you wish, but it took 18 months to get the diagnosis of vasospastic angina. And some doctors tell me it's considered a terminal condition. And other doctors tell me I could live till I'm 80 or 90 and it could go into remission and I would have no further problems.
Don't you just love when the doctors can all agree about exactly what the diagnosis and what was going to happen to you? I love when they have such different opinions. Feel like, are you reading the same books? Are you having an actual education? Or are you just guessing here?
Yeah.
It happens that often to people who have these kind of diseases that if they go to 10 different doctors, they have 10 totally different opinions about how long will they live or what's going to happen to them. Can they actually overcome it? Can they do something themselves to get by? But, yeah.
Oh, do you want to know about the 7 opinions I had?
Oh, please enlighten me. I know some of the listeners have been through these things and it's like a universal thing that we get these. Please let me hear.
It was the craziest situation I've ever been through. So the first doctor said, you can go back to work. I'll reinstate your driver's license. For anyone that doesn't know, in Canada, you have a heart attack. You lose your license immediately, at least for 30 days, to make sure you don't have a second heart attack while you're driving. Now, just picture I'm driving public transit, you know, 200-400 people. They don't want me going off the highway in a bus. So he said, all signs saying you can go back. I think you should go back to work. I think your heart attack was caused by stress. And I said, but I still have chest pain all the time. It hurts a lot. So I don't think it was just a heart attack. And he said, oh, it's in your head. It's just all in your head.
Oh, you're going to love that answer. I mean, so what are you going to reply?
I just walked out and I said, I want another cardiologist. Oh, yeah. My doctor said, you know, they're kind of expensive. And I said, I don't care. I just want another cardiologist. And so my disability company was furious. They said, you can't refuse to come back to work. It's just stress and we're not going to pay you if you don't come back to work. And for the next 8 months, it was just a fight of them saying I wasn't managing the stress in my life. And they were digging in my past and they're like, oh, you know, three kids is kind of stressful. Maybe your kids stress you out. Oh, you're going through a divorce. That sounds stressful. Maybe that's what's causing it. And I'm glad I stuck with it because finally I did find a cardiologist that actually knew what I had and was able to prove it later.
Oh, gotta love it, gotta love it, gotta love it. So if we go back to the heart attack you had, I can, and maybe this sounds stupid, but I've never had one. So how did that happen? And can you talk me a little through what happened in this situation? Because I have no clue how that actually works.
So before I actually had the heart attack, I had some chest pain and I had a lot of heart scans and tests and they said I was fine and they thought it was from my job, the stress of my job. Mm. And then the night it happened, I'd gone to work, I'd had all my kids and my middle son had disappeared and we couldn't find him. And his dad was coming to pick him up. So his dad arrived and he's like, where is he? And I said, I don't know where he is. He didn't come home. All the kids are looking for him and I don't know where he is, which started this big fight. Like, what do you mean you don't know where he is? How did you lose our son? Mm-hmm. And while this was happening, I had this pain going through my shoulder and into my arm. Mm-hmm. And it felt like someone lassoed right around my chest and was just like cinching it really, really tight. So I went inside. And I just lied on the couch for a minute and closed my eyes. And my daughter asked if I was okay. And, you know, being the mom I was like, I'm fine. And I jumped up off the couch. And just as we were about to call the police, my son showed up covered head to toe in mud. They were playing underneath the bridge in the gully with the other kids of the neighborhood. Oh. So I don't know if I was more happy to see him or more angry at him. It was kind of a mix of crying and screaming at him at the same time.
Isn't that almost sometimes the case with kids?
Yeah. So by this point, my heart attack technically was over. And so I have two ex-husbands. My first one took the two older kids that were his to his house. Hmm. And I had my two-year-old. So I phoned every single person I knew. Nobody could take my two-year-old. There was no way I was going to the hospital with a two-year-old. So I just gave him a bath. And I remember, can I share with you like my crazy experience that happened? Yeah. Is this open show? Okay.
Feel free.
So I just lied him on my chest and he was a very hyperactive child that never stopped moving. But for whatever reason, he just lied there quietly. And I had this really weird experience of peace. Mm-hmm. And I could see myself like, as if I was on the ceiling watching the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I heard the question, do you want to live? And I remember my life went before my eyes as if into the future. And I seen my son cross the stage and graduate. And I said, yes, that's what I want is to live to see him graduate. Mm. And then it was over. So I just went to bed with him. And believe it or not, I woke up and went to work the next day.
Yeah, that's the same thing to do. But you didn't know at this time exactly what had happened, did you?
No. So I started work at 4 o'clock a.m. in the morning. And I took my bus out of the yard. And within a minute of driving, I lost my eyesight completely, pulled over. And I knew I was about to get a migraine because I suffered migraines. Mm-hmm. And that was what they said was called an aura before the migraine hit. So I called the supervisor and asked them to drive me to the hospital because I didn't want to take an ambulance. Mm. And I thought I'd be in and out, you know, an hour or two. and go home. And when they were giving me the medicine for the migraine, I told the nurse what happened, and she ran some blood work. And the only thing I remember clearly that day was her running, waving the sheet of paper saying, "You had a major heart attack. They measure the troponin in your blood that's released from heart tissue when your heart tissue is dying." And she said, "If this happened last night, your troponin level shouldn't be this high. You're not going anywhere." She said, "You better phone your family."
Hmm.
And I spent 5 days in the cardiac unit before they let me leave.
Hmm. When you were in that situation, what went through your head when you got that? When she talked to you and told you that?
Yeah, the only thing that went through my head is I don't have anything in writing or anything taken care of, and I don't know what would happen to my kids if I die right now, and I need to find a way out of this. And I spent the next 5 days just reading anything I could find on anyone who'd been through. But I was 34. I couldn't find anything. I was finding articles about CEOs that were 60 that survived a heart attack. Yeah.
Yeah, when it happens to you early in life, you're almost always the like unique case. You never hear about these stories, or seldomly at least. So, yeah, I fully get it. So this, what happened to you here, how did that affect your life afterwards? How did your family take this?
Not well. I ended up going through my second divorce as a result of this.
Okay.
Some of my family disowned me, and due to the 18 months of like really bad chest pain, like unmanageable, complete fatigue, I lost all my friends but one. So it was a really hard. Yeah, it was at the time. Thank you for that. But looking back, it was really a blessing in disguise because I learned what friends really are.
Yeah. Oh, we hear it often that how the family reacts to this situation, not just the, you know, if you have kids, the kids and your spouses, but it can have such a big effect, both in the positive and negative direction. We had on the last episode someone who was born with an abnormality in the hands and was told by some family members, "Oh, you can't eat here if you can't hold the fork and knife the right way." I mean, people are sometimes assholes, maybe even without realizing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just don't think it through, I think, sometimes.
I know. I had one family member in front of my kids tell me I was pathetic because I couldn't manage my own stress and take care of myself. It was so devastating because I believed that for a really long time. I really did believe it was my own fault, and beating myself up for it like did not add any positive to my life, that's for sure.
I can imagine that. So you had to deal with what you went through, but then also all this collateral damage, you can call it, with your relationship and all that. So we'll get into it a little more deeply later, but you made some changes in your life after all these things had happened to you. Can you talk a little about when did you start to pick yourself up and be like, "Okay, I need to do something here"?
From the first day in the hospital, to be honest.
Okay, yeah.
As I was listening, I found James Altucher's blog post about how he turned his life around. And he said to start out by writing 10 ideas every day. And write them for you, write them for other people. So I used every hospital napkin and paper bag, and my aunt came and she brought me a lot of goodies, and I used the big bag from that, and I was just writing as much as I could write. And I was like emailing from the hospital ideas to people. And I started my podcast, which has changed direction, you know, over the years. But initially that was how my podcast started, was from the hospital.
Okay. So it made this change that you actually kind of started to act on what you wanted to do and not just be a passenger.
Yeah. And one other thing I just forgot about until now was in my podcast group, I posted about what I was going through, and one of them was a life coach, and she offered me some free life coaching. I don't know how many times we met, But the first thing she said to me is, I'm not going to charge you for anything. However, you have to give back the same amount of time to somebody else and pay it forward.
Ah, I love that. That's a very good approach. I actually like that a lot when people do that. With the things you went through here, for obvious reason, the podcast is called Life, Death, and Happiness. So I want to get into that part because for a lot of people, it's a kind of a stigma to talk about death or the possibility of dying, and which is, in my world, maybe a little bit silly because we're all going to die someday. But with what you went through, how do you look upon death now? Has it changed anything?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And if anyone is scared of dying, I can relate because before this happened, I was so scared of death. I attended a conference about planning for your death and I had so much anxiety. I didn't even get through the conference. And then after this happened, I realized death is very peaceful. For me, after the heart attack pain was gone, the feeling I had was so peaceful. The only thing for me to fear about death is not finishing what I feel needs to be finished before that time comes.
That makes sense. I went through some of the same thoughts. I had cancer 5 years ago. And in the beginning, for me, it was more like I was afraid to start living my life again because, as you mentioned, I didn't want to start something I couldn't end up finish. And I always worked on a lot of projects and thought it was really fun, but I stopped doing that for almost 1.5 years because I was like, no, I'm not going to start doing anything and, you know, use my network to gather a lot of people and do this if something happened and I cannot follow through with it.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, it just kept me back from living. I have this asshole brother. He knows I love him, but he's a mental coach and has been working with for more than 20 years. And he knows exactly where to poke his finger, you know, to make me react. And we had a talk at that time, and he was like, oh, I get what you're saying. I was like, what exactly do you think I'm saying? Oh, you don't want to live anymore. You just gave up. I get it. With what you went through, it's totally cool that you gave up. Be my guest to do that. While you do that, I'll go do something positive and, you know, live my life. And he knew exactly what he was doing. Because, you gotta. I love him to death. And sometimes I hate him just a bit because he knows exactly what to say in this situation. So, so I totally get what you're saying about these things. So have you talked to your near family members about death after this? Or has it never really been an issue?
Oh, for sure I have. I qualified to have a will done by a law firm that does pro bono legal service for people who have terminal conditions. That's why I said sometimes my condition qualifies as a terminal illness, depending who I speak with. So my will is done. I appointed a guardian for my son. My biggest fear was that my son was not diagnosed at the time with autism. But I knew there was something very different, and I was really fearful if something happened to me and he ended up with strangers, they would not take good care of him. So I had a guardian appointed and I had a trustee appointed, and I just wrote everything out and I gave copies to my aunt, who's like my mom, who's in charge of everything. If, and you know, obviously eventually when the time comes, right? And I talked to all my kids and I told them exactly what all my wishes are, so everybody knows.
I'm kind of curious here, and sorry, how did they react to you talking to them? I mean, so if you can do it in a natural way where people will be okay, but I mean, how do you start that conversation with your children?
We've had it so many times now it feels normal, but in the beginning it was kind of, I just called everyone together and said, I know this is super uncomfortable to talk about, but for me, can you do this? And yeah, I don't think they were too comfortable with it, but they were all willing to listen and to agree with what it was I wanted.
Yeah, I get why they might feel uncomfortable, because most of us are when we talk to it. I mean, for me it's different because I've been doing many episodes, I've been talking about death a lot, also with my wife after I got my diagnosis. So it has become a lot easier. But, you know, the first time you talk about these things, I think for most of us at least, it's kind of a weird conversation to open up. Be like, now we got a plan for what is going to happen if I die. I mean, how do you? Yeah.
Well, you know, I did actually take a job after this happened at a funeral home for 9 months. So that helped me to get comfortable with talking about it.
Oh, you cheated. Oh, come on. No.
It didn't actually work out.
So what advice, if any, would you give to other people who suddenly have some experience that makes them think more about life and death and what could have happened or what might happen to them somewhere down the line? How would you advise them to deal with this topic of death and dying?
Now, are you talking just anybody listening or somebody who has had something happen and now they need to?
No, I would say just like anybody, because we never know what's going to happen. And I mean, what we try to do on this podcast is share the thoughts and the experience we have and try to maybe give some advice that other people can use. Hopefully, none of the listeners right now will have to go through something like this anytime soon or hopefully ever. But, you know, if that happens, or if it happens to someone in your family, sometimes it can be a good thing to be like, oh, you need to listen to this episode of this podcast, because there was this very, very bright woman from Canada who had some very good advice. No pressure at all, no. Advice on how to deal with this topic.
Well, gosh, my advice comes from interviewing other people. I interviewed an attorney from, she's now in Hawaii, and she shared a lot about this. She does estate planning. I interviewed a death coach from Canada, and that's his job, is to help people plan their death. And I worked at the funeral home, and I actually sold prearranged funerals. So bringing this all together, I call it like you need a date night that you talk about death, you know, if you like to drink, have a glass of wine or a coffee or whatever it is you like, and then have an intentional conversation. And I think the big topics I would just put on a sheet would be like, number one, do you want to be cremated or do you want to be buried? And that for some people is a very hard decision. And that decision you don't want to leave in the hands of your kids, because your kids do not want to have to make those types of choices for you. Secondly, you definitely need to make guardians for your kids, because I don't know about where you live, but in Canada or in Hawaii or the United States, if you don't appoint a legal guardian, your children will go into foster care. And then your family has to apply to get the kids. And that is really traumatizing for kids. So simply just having that person that on paper the kids would go to makes life so much easier if anything happens.
Yeah, I think here, I'm not sure if it works that way in real life, but in normally it's like we have like a guardian who we choose for our children when they're born and when they're baptized. And they usually will have to take care of the kids if something happens to you. So it makes it a little easier, but it's not like 100% bulletproof, because they could be bad parents and they could be irresponsible. So you still have some people coming in to check up on the family and be like, is it actually okay to place the kids here? So.
Yes, yes. And the person, we don't baptize, but we dedicate the children. So the person who was like the dedication godparents, they were not able to take my child if anything happened. So I actually approached a friend I'd made through the care committee at my church. And I said, I really like how you guys parent and you're the closest friend I have. Would you consider being the godmom and dad for my son? And she was just like shocked, like, wow, no one's ever asked me that. And they talked about it and they said yes. So I put her in the will just in case, you know. And then I, of course, gave her permission. If that happens 10 years later and you're not in a place you can, I trust your judgment as to what's best for him at that point in time. to just kind of release that to her.
It might have come as a surprise to them, but imagine how good that must have felt for them. I mean, you're really, you know, that's a, what you call the, it doesn't get any bigger than that. Somebody asking you, so actually, if something happened, I trust you so much. Will you take care of my kids? I love that you did that, actually. That, yep, I applaud that. That's
well, all of that just took away like so much of my worry. And thankfully, I had life insurance. But I'll, can I share a story that's like a really good life lesson for anyone listening right
now? Feel free.
Okay, so I bought life insurance when I was 24. Mm-hmm. It's very cheap. The younger you buy it, the less it costs you. And when I went through my divorce, I was the first time we'd separated, I was 34. And I had living life insurance, which if anyone doesn't know, it pays out, in my case, it would have been $100,000 if you get cancer, heart attack, stroke, any of the big illnesses. And when we separated, I was really hard up for money. So I called my life insurance guy and I said, I wanted to cancel my life insurance. And he said, okay, if you must, cancel the living life insurance. But whatever you do, don't cancel your life insurance because if you apply again, it's going to be triple the cost now. So I listened to him and I canceled the living life insurance 31 days before my heart attack.
Ah.
If I had the heart attack within 30 days, it would have been reinstatable, but it was one day past the window and I lost $100,000.
Oh, come on. That's just freaking unfair.
So through this story, I hope that if you're having the conversation and you're still well, that you consider looking at life insurance or living life insurance or whatever that you can afford as long as you have kids. It's a great relief for me to know that at least I had that life insurance. Mm-hmm. So if something happened, his godmother would have more than enough to take care of him till he's of age.
I actually have a very, very short story. So I've told it before, actually, just under different circumstances. But when you have a terminal illness, I was told many years ago I was cured. It just showed up. You cannot cure that disease. So kind of a bummer. But I actually wanted to get a life insurance at the time. And I couldn't get it. And then some years after, I wanted to buy a car and I just wanted to borrow a small amount of money. And the bank was like, oh, if you want to borrow that kind of money, you need a life insurance through us. And I was like, yeah. And I got the money. And then the paper came back like a month later. But I was like, there's no way you can get this here. And I was like, yeah, that's okay. I didn't want it to begin with. And then when I was actually re-diagnosed 5 years later, I was like, oh, the insurance company, they knew I was still sick. I mean, they will probably just look up the disease I used to have and be like, oh, that's incurable. But my doctors didn't tell me. And they talked to me for like 15, almost 19 years, about, oh yeah, you're good, you're healthy now, nothing is wrong. But the insurance companies, you can always bet that they know what's going on. That's always. So ironic. Not the doctors, the insurance company. Like,
absolutely. Oh. Yeah.
So, but we've been talking a little about death, and I want to go into the good part.
All right.
The first two parts is good too, of course, but what is important is how you use these things happening in your life, because no matter who we are and what we go through, we can use it for either to feel sad for ourselves or go into depression or dig ourselves deeper into the mud, or we can use it to lift the head up and, you know, move forward, use it as some kind of fuel to do something differently. And you have done that with the podcast you're making. But I'm also wondering, how do you define happiness? And what is it to you? What is happiness to you?
To be honest with you, I find it hard to define what happiness is in actual words. So the best I could really come to it is to say that to be able to be in any moment and just feel good, feel bliss or joy or gratitude, despite whatever's going around me, which is something I'd never been able to do before, to me is happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. And also, when you talk about this, I like that because it's more like staying in the present and just be where you are and be able to enjoy that. I mean, that is like kind of the definition of how we all should live our life, I think. Be present with the people around. I mean, in these days, we have a tendency to use our smartphones all the time and we have all these distractions. I think it's a very, very cool way to define happiness, just to be there and be happy about the things you have. Show gratitude, and yeah, I like that. I love, actually.
It's a lot of work. It took me years to be able to do that because before that, I was looking at a promotion and working my way into management, and all I could think about was I wanted more money and more things and a nicer truck and a nicer house, and you know, my kids played hockey and what was next, and every single moment I had was looking at the next moment or the next thing, and I was always stressed out or tired. So now to be able to just sit back and watch the kids play and just feel that joy in the moment and not have it robbed of like worry and stress and anxiety is just amazing for me.
Yeah, I totally feel you. And also that is a good reminder to everybody that there's nothing wrong in setting goals for yourself. Absolutely not. But you have to teach yourself how to enjoy the road to the goal. I mean, to actually enjoy the trip you're going on. Because if you don't, the goal will never satisfy you in any way.
So true. Absolutely. Yeah. So, every finish line I crossed, I was thinking about the next one already.
It makes sense. So you never get that enjoyment where you really be like, I did it. It's more like, I did it, but I could have done it this better. I could have cut out a few seconds of my time or whatever that is. I mean, yeah.
You know it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, feel very, very familiar. So where you are in life now, what matters the most to you?
I would have to say helping other people now. Yeah.
That's a good thing. And also like a follow-up question. So when you have days where you're a bit down, what advices, or at least what do you do to lift up your spirits, your mood, and change that direction of negative thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good one. I have a whole pile of things I do, to be honest with you. Anywhere from listening to music, I always tell people, burn the music in your brain before you need it. So, you know, you have some really good songs that lift up your spirits. And then when you're in a really down mood, you can call on that. having a nice bubble bath without the kids banging on the door calling me is like my favorite. That's such a rarity. Hiking, going for a walk. Mm-hmm. And then I think the number one is, for me, because I'm such an extrovert, is getting out into community. Mm-hmm. It just really fills me up to be around other people that are also positive or forward-moving kind of people.
Mm-hmm. That trigger you mentioned there is so important to find. I think we all have this one or two things that works almost all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that can get you through a lot of shit, by my language.
Absolutely.
You've tried to figure out how to be happy afterwards and how to build up a better life for yourself. So was it something that came instantly? Or what thoughts process did you go through to get to where you are now regarding happiness and feeling good about where you are in life?
Oh, I don't know if I ever will get there. It's an ongoing journey, to be honest with you, because the biggest qualifier I've had to learn is when should I allow myself not to be happy and to really just feel that grief or sadness or whatever it is that I'm working through, versus like I don't want to just wallow in sadness or sorrow. So kind of just checking in once in a while, is this something I want to drown out with my phone or a book or making myself busy, or is this something I want to just put on some music and allow that feeling to pass?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a hard one. But to be honest, it took me about 4 years because I did a couple years of school online and became a life coach. And I went through at least 2 years of therapy through this time. And then I was life coached by others for an entire year. So it was a lot of work to get to where I am today.
Yeah, usually it just doesn't happen overnight. Even though sometimes we hear these stories about, oh, something happened in my life and like this, everything was changed. But I think, like in your case, it usually doesn't work that way. I mean, we human beings, we have to kind of process each step we're going through, and we have to, you know, build up from there.
Yeah, you're onto something, because when you talk about overnight success, I mean, wasn't it the Beatles that said they played every night in the bar for like 7 years when they became an overnight success?
Yeah, we have like a Danish comedian who has his own TV show. He's raised and grew up in the same place as me and my brothers did. We knew him from a local youth club. And people were like, oh, where did he come from when he suddenly went on television? He was like, oh, he's this new star. But we knew he had been working on local radio station, trying to build up something and trying to get better for more than 15 years before that happened. So it's like, yeah, it wasn't really overnight, okay? I mean, it was hard work to get there. Yeah. Probably a lot of ups and downs in between that time. I mean, yeah, I think that goes for most people.
When it comes to personal development, I swear when you get there, like things beyond your control happen and then you're back to square one, except you're never really back to square one because you have more tools and more skills each time that happens.
Oh, yeah. And that's a good thing. I know it's very cliche about that old one about what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But for most people, it actually worked that way. So it might be cliche, but there's a reason people talk about that. I mean,
yeah, it's so hard in the time, right?
Yeah.
Like it was my cat, my little kitty. She was lost in the forest fires. I don't know if you guys heard about the fires in Canada last year.
We heard about a lot on the, I think most of what we heard about was those in the US and California. Yeah. But
yeah. Sort of like that, but smaller scale. And it was just so sad. The cat, never seen her again. Lots of animals, you know, that happened to. And I still hope that she found someone else's house and she's good and safe. But like, that like hurt. I don't know. It's just a cat, but it hurts so much, like losing a kid. And it's that whole process again, you know, that you go through.
People who doesn't have any pets, they don't get that part at all. I feel the same way. I mean, my dog is my family member as much as any one of us. I mean, when I was down, when I got re-diagnosed, when I got cancer, when I was at home, I didn't know if I should live or die or anything. He was there all the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can feel when you can, they can feel what emotional state you're in. I mean, I can't count how many times he's been there at the right moment. Just would now be like, Daddy, hi. I mean, that's just, people who say that animals, it's just, you're being silly, they don't matter, it's just animals. Blah, they don't know better. So I would probably feel the same way as you'd be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, isn't that almost like a miracle cure if someone's listening that just found out they're ill and they are allowed or can or have the resources? Seriously, consider getting a pet. It's so healing.
Oh, yeah. It is. It can help so much. They're good listeners. That's for sure.
Yes, definitely.
Sometimes you need that when you're going through some hard times. Mm-hmm. Somebody who could actually listen without coming out with 10,000 different good advices. I mean, yeah, I like that. But speaking of advices, I want to get back into that because I don't know if you have any advice for people who are getting diagnosed with a disease or illness, or, you know, just when something happened that twists and turns their life upside down, where they don't know if they're going to make it through. What would your advice to be about how to handle such a big thing coming into your life?
Yeah, that's, for me, I won't go too deep unless you want me to, but for me, it was the discovery of something bigger than myself that got me through. And without that, I'm not sure how people do get through. But if they were to not have that, I would think the next best thing would be connection, because you're kind of want to lock yourself in your house and not talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. And that only makes it worse.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right about that. Okay, can I ask you? I hope, let me know if I'm asking a question that you don't feel comfortable answering. But are we talking about a spiritual thing or a belief that helped you through?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that at all. I know I'm a born Christian, but I'm probably an atheist. But I do realize that no matter how I look upon religion and stuff like that, I know some people who has had, it has done so much good for their life. I mean, so in my world at least, there's absolutely nothing wrong. Whatever works for you, that's the right thing to do. So I hope you found something that really mattered to you in that way, that you can also use in your future when things are going bad.
Yeah, it changed my entire life completely.
It has been such a pleasure talking to you. I'm so glad you wanted to join me here. Sometimes it's good to go out of your own little box and talk to some people that you just met. I can say we met online in a group where we talked, and then we're like, yeah, that could actually be interesting to hear your story. So I'm really glad.
Well, I just thank you so much for having me on your show. I think it's a great thing that you're doing, and just a fantastic community, so that when people do unfortunately find out they're having to look at something deep, could be terminal, could just be a really bad illness, it's great they have this community that they can be a part of.
I'm glad you think so. And I don't know here if there's anything you want to share with people out there about yourself, your life, or anything by the end here. And you are also allowed to mention your podcast. That's totally okay. We have had people who are in here who came out with a music album like a few weeks before the episode. So feel free.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, it's something that matters in your life. So we want to hear about it.
Well, I would like to say, if anyone's feeling alone and they feel like they have it worse than anyone else and no one gets them or understands them, they can reach out and message me anytime, day or night. I'm always happy to connect with someone who's in that space. And I'm a trained life coach, so most of the time I'm pretty good at just listening and not giving 100 suggestions of what to do when that's the last thing that you need.
Oh, yeah.
My podcast could be helpful, because I've interviewed about 80 or 90 people now with all kinds of extreme things that have happened they've overcome. Mm-hmm. So if you go to my website, synergymindsetcoaching.com, you can search whatever it is you're going through and it might pop up that episode. Mm-hmm. And then most of the people I've interviewed have their own blog or podcast, and they're willing to talk with you as well. So I had one guest who was bucked off a horse and broke his entire body, lost his job, had to start over from square one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know anyone else that's happened to, but if you're listening and that's what's happened, you can find his episode, give it a listen, and then connect with him and his community, if that will help.
Nice. So thank you so much. I will make sure to put the links to your site in the description of this podcast. So if you are sitting out there and be like, oh, what was the site name she mentioned? Just go down in the description, okay? It will be right there, so you can learn some more about the podcast and what you're doing.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. And I hope you will have a wonderful day, and I just appreciate so much you took your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to tonight's episode of Life, Death, and Happiness. If you like this, please do us a big favor and head over to iTunes, Overcast, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this podcast from, and subscribe to us. If you also give us a good rating, it will help us a lot reaching much more people, so I will appreciate that a lot too. Also, you can of course follow us on Facebook and Twitter and help us spread the word through there. My name is Daniel, and thank you so much for listening.